So let's go back to that chart and let's start navigating some of these subject matter. So on the consumer protection side, and of course, this is just, you know, Mike Nassy's categorization of these issues. You got to fit a bill in some topics. So I put some of these things in here, and they're very different types of reform. On the left side of this graphic is what most people would think of as truly kind of consumer-related pricing reforms, rate plans, et cetera. The right side of this graphic is the big financial fallout mechanisms that were designed to deal with the economic consequences of the event. So let's touch upon some highlights. All of this stuff is addressed in your course materials. I'm only going to, because of time, only hit a few of them here today. So on the kind of left side of that graphic, the big topic was the concept of index products. How could we be letting people buy those? Obviously, a very small component of the ERCOT retail market was actually in these kinds of plans. It's a little bit more of an issue when you get into kind of the commercial side and you have pass-through ancillary services costs, which certainly were escalated well beyond what people envisioned they would be, given the duration, the extremity and the duration of the event that contributed to that. But just on that wholesale index price product, you saw a House priority bill. There were a whole slew of House priority bills. They were all, you know, single double-digit bills, as they are every session. And the Senate had their own priority bills, and what you saw was a few of the House bills passed on their own, and then the rest of those House bills were kind of merged into Senate Bill 3. So we'll see that. But in House Bill 16, we had this prohibition of these types of products. There's an acknowledgement allowance for commercial product and industrial consumers who can still get these kinds of products. Notice requirements also were added to the bill. So House Bill 17 by Desitel actually went to kind of backup power and source of energy disputes. You know, this was an interesting convergence of two different debates that have been rocking really across the country. Some municipal governments, you know, infamously Berkeley, Boulder, even Austin, considering not allowing people who had new builds and developments to have natural gas appliances, not allowing backup natural gas generation for different reasons. This bill was really focused on the fact that, you know, backup generation ended up being a great benefit if you had it, and if you didn't, you regretted it. And that caught caught the imagination of both sides of the aisle in the House. And so that bill, there was a bill that was more explicitly targeted at keeping municipalities from actually restricting natural gas appliance use, for example, in both new and in retrofit or renovations. But that bill didn't pass. But House Bill 17 does provide some pretty significant markers or restrictions on municipal government's ability to do that. So that's an interesting bill. We'll see how that plays out as we move forward. Representative King had a bill that was driven by a desire to be able to let TDUs interact locally in a little bit more aggressive way during emergency conditions with backup generation in a way that maybe most market purists wouldn't be all that comfortable with. There were some protections put in the bill. I do a lot of work with co-ops. We were concerned about the potential fallout from this bill in terms of letting TDUs get into the business of emergency backup. But I think there were adequate guardrails put on the bill, and it did pass House Bill 2483. Very significant aspect of the legislative session was perhaps some failings in the emergency alert and coordination aspect. I'll talk about the kind of formal and structural coordination of the various agencies and entities here in a second, but a power outage alert system, I put it in the consumer side because that's actually kind of a consumer-facing reform that came in the form of Sections 1 and 2 of Senate Bill 3. So that was a significant change. Education, consumer customer education was a big part of Senate Bill 3, and there's several sections of the bill that hit that topic. Now let's shift over to the kind of the economic consequences on that chart, which is the right side of the graphic I showed you. Kind of what did the legislature do to deal with the economic consequences of the event? Repricing was a big theme. Should the PUC have done what they did? Had they not, what would have happened? I frankly have never seen in my practice of, you know, over a quarter century, the kind of confrontations between two big statewide officials as we saw in this session. And it really came down to that the governor's office and the Speaker of the House and the House leadership weren't willing to go down the road of actually anything that looked like repricing of the market. The lieutenant governor was pushing that, his leadership within the Senate to do it. It did not happen, but instead what happened was a couple of securitization slash long-term payout type approaches. The first bill, Senate Bill 1580, is a co-op only securitization bill. For those of you who've done securitization either as part of the rollout of DREG and stranded cost discussions or just in co-ops in general, all it really did was expand the kinds of things co-ops are already authorized to securitize into this new category of costs that were perceived to be, you know, unforeseeable due to the winter storm, both the actions of the PUC and the duration of the event. A couple of really important provisions were added in this bill. The elephant in the room of the economic outgrowth of the event was that Brazos Cooperative and Rayburn Country were a huge component of the accounts payable that was still owed after the event. There's a very important bankruptcy proceeding relating to those entities where these issues are being kind of re-debated. Obviously, there's litigation. I'm not going to go into all of that, but this bill was designed to try to actually allow co-ops to use securitization like they would traditionally just for this new range of costs. There was this provision added that said if you want to